I mean, look, what if Luke Skywalker had stayed on Tatooine, right? And had waited for the next season, like Uncle Ben had suggested. Yeah. You know? We would not have had that New Hope.
Okay, Duffy.
Okay. What? What? We're talking about a disconnect here. What?
It's a lot of work for all of you to get up on a Saturday morning and to come out. This group of people in front of me, they're all busy. Every one of them, they have things on their agenda to do. And it's easy to not make this type of thing a priority. I just know because I used to sit in some of their seats, right? The first thing I want to say is thank you to all of you. I appreciate it. But the bigger thank you is that most of the people on this board, if you thought ensuring that the elections were safe was important, you're talking to the people that did it. That's them. I get choked up on this. I'm inspired by you being here, but damn it, I'm inspired by these people. What they've meant to our country, what they've meant to our democracy is really, it cannot be overstated.
Destiny. Destiny. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. 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 You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
So I'm going to start with our Secretary of State. I'm going to start with him with a question that is a change from the agenda. And it's because I was listening to him talk to the governor outside. And as I was listening to him talk to the governor, here's my first question for you. Man, a lot of us are worried about the next election. All right, we're worried about the fact that somehow or another that the right of the voters gets tipped over. Whatever the right of the voters is, whether it's the person I support or the person I oppose, I want to make certain that that happens. What efforts are going on around the country, Adrian, and what role are you playing in that?
Well, first and foremost, thank you so much for having me. And second, as the Secretary of State, I'm not here to endorse any party, any initiative, or any candidate, except, well, no, I'm not going to make any exceptions to that, just for today. Second, I want to make sure that we acknowledge the fact that even as we speak right now, there are folks across the entire Grand Canyon state who are still working on last Tuesday's presidential preference election, which was just a few days ago. And imagine my disappointment waking up the next day, not hearing calls for my resignation, not hearing calls for an audit and all this other stuff. And that's because we prepared well. In spite of the fact that we've lost 12 of our 15 highest level, in 12 of our 15 counties, we've lost some highest level election administrators. Our office did our level best to help folks across Arizona in those election administrator positions prepare. And this is part of the effort here in Arizona that I have joined with a lot of my colleagues across the United States of America to make sure that we continue to provide secure elections, that we continue to provide free, open, and accessible elections. And I emphasize the word continue because there hasn't been a time that I am aware of when we didn't have free and fair elections in recent past, where we didn't have secure elections, where we did not have accountable elections. The mythology and the conspiracy theories and the mismal and disinformation that have penetrated our society into a time when we actually have to be sitting here and having this discussion is being pushed back against as hard as possible among just about all of our colleagues at Secretary of State level across the country. And I know Stephen will speak to local administrators and their posture. We're doing our level best at the National Association of Secretaries of State in conjunction with the National Association of Election Directors. We have all kinds of workshops, all kinds of seminars, all kinds of information sharing, all kinds of best practice sharing, and we are preparing for emerging threats like AGI, artificial generative intelligence. That is going to be an amplifier of a lot of the same old weapons that we've had to suffer, like some of the shortages that we've experienced in our election administrator positions across the United States of America. Very particularly, we've felt it here in Arizona. But I want to go back to the most important thing that I said, and that is this. We still have folks at this moment working on this past Tuesday's election, because elections don't stop just because the networks have made the call. The election administration and election work is a, especially from general cycle to general cycle, it is a 720-day calendar. That's almost two full years, because we don't stop, we won't stop. I feel kind of like a pop artist right now, but that's just the way it is. So we're doing well.
Yep. Yeah. All right, next question I'm gonna ask, and I'm gonna do both of them at the same.
Singer. He's a good singer.
Yeah. Adrian's a good singer?
Yes, he is.
Oh my gosh.
Here we go.
I'm a bad guitar player, so I'll have to invite you over one day.
Here we go. All right.
All right, so here's the second question, because I'm gonna do both of them at the same time to each one of the speakers. The second one is this, and I'm gonna combine these two things into one. The first one is, what do you think we can do? There are a lot of unaffiliated voters who end up being left out of the process. What can we do to be able to make that better? And the second question is, with both the FAIR initiative and then whatever happens after that, whether we do a top two, top three, top four, ranked choice voting, can the state election system handle that? Are we going to be able to be effective at making certain that that runs correctly?
Well, I think one of the first thing is not just relevant to independent voters or non-affiliated voters. It's relevant to all voters. I mean, there's a reason folks have been leaving the two major parties and going to the unaffiliated world. And there's a reason the unaffiliated world has been lowering their percentage of participation. And that's because American politics have turned into a bickering match instead of a policy discourse. They've turned into, how can I one-up somebody on TikTok versus how can I sit with someone, compromise, and actually make something positive happen for my constituency? So number one, we've got to elect folks who are willing to put aside the differences, deal with what we can deal with, in other words, those things that we agree on. And as an example, I will say, you know, I'm very proud of the fact that my administration, five of our six legislative initiatives are sponsored by Republicans, and I'm a Democrat. That's just the way it is. You can work, and you can work across the aisle, and you can get things done for your constituency, for your office, for your administration, but you got to put aside the pettiness. And there's not enough folks in that space. So number one, it applies to all voters, not just independent voters. We need folks that are willing to get the job done, not just get clicks. And insofar as the initiative and the impact that it could have on the electorate and our systems, can it be worked out? That is one of the number one reasons why I've been involved and coming to these things and working with all political parties and all the folks in this space, because I want to make sure folks understand that there are technical challenges. There are some difficulties. We can't just wave a magic wand and change some really complicated data systems, some really complicated information systems. We've got procurement rules that we have to deal with. We've got all of that mundane stuff that's behind the scenes that can delay a positive change or any change, sometimes years beyond where we're at. In fact, we have been in our administration looking at some potential court orders coming down that we will not, if they come down the way we're wondering, we will not be able to comply with them as quickly as the folks who are suing want. We just can't. We just don't have the capacity, and I'll tell you why. In our office, we just replaced a server in the Secretary of State's office that was 11 years old, right? It was a fifth grader. I mean, this is a big deal, because the basic fundamental functions of our offices have been, and I will say this is probably true for a lot of spaces in government, have been allowed to deteriorate because we haven't been investing in the critical infrastructure, the basic stuff of governance, our networking systems, our communication systems, our computer systems, all of this sort of stuff. So can we implement, for example, and again, just as an example, can we implement ranked choice voting if that's what the voters decide and that's what the decision makers decide? Yes. Will it take some time? Absolutely. Because I'm not just talking about the back end systems. I'm talking about educating the public as well. This is a very, very different thing for a lot of people. A lot of people. And we're not just dealing with folks in the urban core. We're dealing with voters who are out on Indian reservations. We're talking about folks who are out in our farming communities, out in our mining communities. When we talk about Arizona writ large, we're talking about one of the most diverse set of voters in the United States of America as it pertains to language, culture, economics, geography, and so forth. So when we consider making massive changes that will impact the fundamental rights of our fellow citizens, we need to take into account those fellow citizens, all of them, not just the ones that live, you know, here in the core of downtown Phoenix.
Thank you. Amanda, so you're involved with the Arizona We Want, with ASU. So for those of you that don't know the organization, there's a great website, you can go take a look at it. But one of the things that they do is they put together this poll. And the poll shows where there's broad agreement amongst Arizonans, broad agreement amongst Arizonans. Literally 70% that support issues on education or the environment or other things. There's a challenge in trying to figure out, well, why is it that that's such a disconnect with the legislature? But I don't want to start with that question with you. I want you to talk about the polling, what you're doing inside the organization, and why you think that matters.
Sure. Thank you so much. Good morning. My name is Amanda Burke. I serve as the executive vice president at a statewide nonpartisan nonprofit organization called the Center for the Future of Arizona. We're based in Phoenix, but we are statewide and have staff that live and work statewide. And our mission is to bring Arizonans together to create a stronger and brighter future for our state. And the vision that we uphold for ourselves, but really for the state as a whole, is something, and Paul mentioned this, called the Arizona We Want. And it's grounded in the beliefs, the hopes, the shared dreams that Arizonans hold for the future success of their communities and the state as a whole. And our approach to really being able to identify what are those shared priorities has been to go directly to Arizonans and ask them. And we are doing that. We've been doing that now for 15 years through major, robust public opinion polling and survey research. Two main projects. One is the Gallup Arizona Project. We do this every 10 years. And to our knowledge, it is the most robust, most comprehensive survey of its kind in Arizona. The most recent one was conducted in 2020. And we ask Arizonans, as you think about the next 10 years, what are the most important issues? So it really is not intended to be point in time, but it's intended to help drive a 10-year action agenda. Just to give you a sense of the scope of the survey, it's a sample size of over 3,500 Arizonans, which is a very large sample size if you're familiar with survey research. It is designed, and this is one of the reasons we work with Gallup, is to be representative of Arizonans. Secretary Fuentes spoke about the diversity of Arizona, and so that's important. So we ensured that we have a statistically representative sample when it comes to urban and rural geographies, and then across all ages, incomes, ethnicities, political identities, so that we can say with confidence, this is what Arizonans care about. What we learned through the Gallup Arizona survey is that we have much more in common than not when it comes to what we care about and what we want for the future. We set the threshold to be able to determine what that is at 70%. So to be able to say that there was strong agreement across Arizonans, we said it had to meet a 70% threshold, which is really strong agreement. And from that, we identified what we call seven shared public values that Arizonans hold and care about, and identified 42 specific actions that Arizona that met that threshold of 70% across all the major issue areas: education, immigration, fair, just, and equitable systems, jobs in the economy, civic engagement. And some of the materials are on the table on your way out that, that you're welcome to grab. Then most recently, we said, well, what about likely voters? You know, we continue to hear that we're hopelessly divided, that we're fractured. Our Gallup Arizona survey really flies in the face of that. But what about likely voters? So in 2022, we conducted the first ever Arizona Voters Agenda, which is intended to be representative of the likely voters. In 2022, What we found were results that really mirrored what we learned in the Gallup Arizona survey. There is overwhelming support for a strong quality education system in Arizona. In the 2022 Gallup, or 2022 Arizona voters agenda, 89% of likely voters said at a strongly agree rate that they want to have great teachers and great leaders in every school. One other stat, 88% said every single school should have the resources they need to deliver a quality education to every child, regardless of the zip code that they live in. Those are high levels of agreement. For something to make the Arizona voters agenda, the methodology was it had to reach 50% or more total support among Republicans, independents and unaffiliated voters, and Democrats to make the agenda. And I won't read this, but there are many, many items that made the agenda, which again point to the fact that we agree on a lot. And the whole idea behind this was, rather than continue to center the election discussion on the issues that divide us or the hot button issues, let's try to identify where is there some common ground with the idea that maybe we could get some things done there, and to look to the media, who are so influential in the conversations that happen in our elections and our political system, and to really try to incentivize the media to not talk only about the divisive issues, but really ask candidates running for office, what are your plans to be able to address immigration, where there is 89% support for immigration reform with a pathway to citizenship? Huge levels of support. So I share all of this, one, because you all clearly care about democracy, care about issues facing the future of our state. And I want to make sure that you have the resources and the information, because it's important that each of us carries this message forward of we are not divided, and to be able to have trustworthy information to point to. So we hope you'll use that information. We're conducting the next Arizona Voters Agenda for 2024 right now. We conducted the first survey just 2 weeks ago, and we'll conduct a second survey immediately after the primary. And I can share again, we'll roll out the survey results in early May. Lots of agreement across Republicans, independents, unaffiliated voters, and Democrats. And also some things to be concerned about in terms of outlook around Arizona. So thank you.
Let me ask one more question, because I thought this was interesting. So if 95% of the Democrats in your poll supported a measure, but only 10% of the Republicans, however, enough people who are independents still got it to a high number, would that meet the threshold of where you saw we were in agreement?
No, for the Arizona voters agenda, it had to reach 50%, really with the idea that on both sides, all three. And then it actually had to reach strongly support across the board.
I mean, that's
amazing. It's a pretty high bar. High Ground Public Affairs is our partner for that survey. It's a sample of 500 Arizonans. Both surveys are conducted in English and Spanish. All this information is available on our website. And then also I have materials to share.
Thank you. All right, Rusty.
I was coasting, Wayne.
Rusty, to me, it should be like our Socrates. And here's what I mean, right? Like, he ends up being charged with something that he's wrongfully charged with. And then they finally ask Socrates, what should your punishment be? And he says, I'll tell you what my punishment should be. I should get a lifetime pension for what I've done for you. Rusty should get a lifetime pension for what he did for us. All right, Rusty, here's my question, because this is the one that blows my mind. You're a Republican. And by the way, I've spoken to him. He's really a Republican. I mean, he's not kidding, right? He's a Republican. He voted for Trump. He's voted for Republicans for many, many years. He actually rose to the highest level you could be in the legislature. He represented the other Republicans. And you get a phone call one day that says, hey, I want to change the election. I want to change the outcome. It wasn't that blunt, but it was pretty damn close. You had to know when you bowed your back, it was going to be rough, all right? That it was going to take a toll on you and your family. Where'd that grit come from? What made you make that decision? as opposed to just folding, because you could have folded.
First of all, thank you for inviting me to the obituary party. And I was going to ask that 11-year-old server, is that the one we picked up from Maduro down in Venezuela? And the ongoing...
That was way before my time. So I just don't know.
Well, I've been asked this many times, and I guess the answer is, when decisions come like that, or the pressure is right now, it isn't a point of, let's see now, what did I plan to say? Or what do I have on my script? Or what does my campaign speech allow? It's you're either in or you're out, and the decision is now. And so you're either ready or you're not. And so I answer, I'm a believer. I believe in a God who holds me accountable, but I also believe in a God who gives me the greatest gift that the Constitution allows, and that is the disciplined self-choice. That which no one can take from me, but only I can give away. And that agency is focused at the Adrian Fontes and Stephen Richer level, where they make sure that my vote counts and counts correctly, one way or the other. The country, the community, the person, I will hold that responsibility of how I vote between me and my God. And they make sure that that's translated into a correct vote, however it is that I and all of us jointly decide at any one time. So, raised sheep farm in central Arizona with a coach dad at Prescott High School, a mom, very talented singer, Phoenix Symphony, etc. Taught us hard work, taught us prayer, taught us responsibility, God, family, country. My dad was a former Marine. My dad is a Marine.
Marine. Thank you, Rusty.
No formers.
Thank you, Rusty.
And I agree with them. They didn't force us what to believe. We were very opinionated in why we believe what we did. But we have a very tight family. And so those decisions of, am I going to throw away? Am I going to cheat to win? Is it worth that much to cheat to win? And so when it came, when they asked the question, he and Rudy, we want a committee meeting at the legislature where we can bring sufficient doubt that the legislature can vote to pass on the Biden electors and to put in the Trump electors. And I just said, I have never heard of that one. But Mr. Trump, I voted for you. I walked for you. I campaigned for you. I was on this stinking stage with you. But I will do nothing illegal for you. Now he said, so the decision, the words took what? 2.5 seconds? It wasn't a pre-planned speech, but I could feel it coming. I could feel it coming. And it said, you cannot do what they're going to ask you to do. You cannot do this. And so the decision was already taken. I'd already taken that decision as a Boy Scout to do my duty to God and my country, as a holder of a temple recommend for my faith, that I will be honest in my dealings with my fellow men. And those types of things ingrained the importance of keeping a promise, and especially that I will protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. We swore to that. It doesn't go away. There's not a time limit. And so it was done. It was over. And then it was all manage. Okay, well, okay, would you consider XYZ? Now I'm just managing. No, I'm not going to do the Fincham plan or whatever, you know. Bless his heart. And if you're from Alabama, you know what that means. But I guess that's my answer. The answer was already in me. Just you.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You're welcome.
God bless Rusty Ballard. All right, Stephen.
Okay.
So this guy is a very smart lawyer. I know some of his partners. In fact, my partner here writing a book, Larry Aldrich, who is a publisher of a newspaper and a constitutional lawyer, we're writing this book called What's Right with America. You may not know this, but that was shameless promotion on your back. But nonetheless, we run with a guy named Steve Roman, and he's tied into a lot of the folks at Snell and Wilmer. Yeah. And man, do they extol your phrases. They all talk about how smart you were and how great a lawyer you were. And you could have made a lot more money doing something else. That's just clear.
Not if you ask the internet.
Yeah.
That's just where it's at.
You and me both, pal.
The surprise for me, and it was only a surprise because I didn't know him, right? The surprise for me was, this is a guy who bowed his back not once, 100 times, saying, no, this election was fair. No, we counted the votes. He did the things to make certain that it was fair, to make certain that they were recounted, that he knew that it was accurate. But then he doesn't let up. I want to know the effect that that's had on your life.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you all for having me both. This is a lovely office. Thank you for hosting. I'm so glad I finally got to visit. The Arizona...
I like the 8th floor better. Oh, well,
there's an occupant currently. You have to talk to him.
Sorry.
The Arizona Wildcats are currently winning 40-23 with 2:44 left in the first quarter. So
talk about shameless promotion. Good.
And GCU won last night. Lopes up. Yeah, so very, very good. All right, Stephen Richer, Maricopa County Recorder, responsible for early voting and voter registration in Maricopa County. Before I get to that, I want to the question that Adrian was addressing about participation of independents. Who could independents participate in the presidential preference election that we just had on Tuesday? No. Right. Could independents, registered independents and party not declared?
No.
Only if the party had allowed it.
Okay. Only if the party had allowed it, but they did not. So independents and party not declared could not participate in this past election. Can independents and party not declared participate in the July 30th Arizona statewide primary?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so you all know that. Not everyone does know that. We spend a lot of effort trying to educate people in 2022. We spent a lot of time trying to say, if you're an independent, party not declared, and you're registered 29 days before the election, you can participate in this election. You just have to choose whether you want a Republican ballot or you want a Democrat ballot. And they would say, well, I thought we couldn't. It was like, no, that was the 2020 presidential preference election. They're like, so I can't? No, you can. And now for this past presidential preference election, we told them, no, you can't. And so a lot of people get confused. And so we made a lot of effort for the August then president or statewide primary to let independents, party not declared, know that they could participate. And we had the highest independent party not declared participation rate ever in that August 22 primary. It was 14%. So in terms of who's participating, it gets a little bit to the confusing rules, but there's other stuff in it. And, so that was just one point that I wanted to pick up. How has it changed my life? It has changed my life dramatically. It has changed my life in terms of what my wife and I do. It has changed my life politically, certainly. I get to spend a lot more time with Adrian now. as a result. I just think that famous political scientist David Mayhew wrote that politicians are single-minded seekers of re-election. And that's what he premised his political theory on. And when I was thinking about politics, I worked at think tanks, I worked at conservative think tanks. I was like, there's no way that's true. That's way too cynical. I'm sure it factors in. But surely politicians care about grand philosophies. A limited government philosophy was what I was drawn to. They care about their community. They care about first principles. They care about lines in the sand that they do not cross. Well, David Mayhew had it more right than I knew. The last 3 years have been a lesson in that. And so you say, well, how do you, if politicians are single-minded seekers of re-election, then how do you change the game? Well, then you change the incentive structure. And I think changing the incentive structure is part, maybe we can talk about electoral reform. And certainly some of the people in this room want to talk about electoral reform. But it's also part cultural, some of the stuff that Rusty was talking about what are your values, what are you going to reward. It's part who's getting involved. And one of the things that I wish would happen with some of the members of the business community would say, hey, this is not what we want people talking about. This is tarnishing our state's reputation. And so if they get involved, then the incentives will change. And then if those incentives will change, then maybe we'll be talking about more things in the Arizona voters' agenda and less things that are currently right now incentivized by what I still believe to be a minority, but a very passionate, very loud, and a minority that is definitely committed to acting on those issues. So so that's the new world of, that's what my thoughts are on that. In terms of the lives of election administrators, I think if you came down to our facility right now, you would see it looks like we're in a war zone. And that's an indictment of where we are as a country. But the one thing that we have promised to anyone who participates in the process, whether it's as a voter or it's as somebody who works in the process, is that we, the Secretary of State, the Department of Homeland Security, the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, all the local PDs, my office, the Board of Supervisors, we'll do everything in our power to make sure that you can safely participate in this process. And does that mean that we're diverting resources away from other things? Yeah, it's a darn shame that we have sheriff's deputies working with us instead of being out in the field. But we all, and I think everyone in this room believes that this is so core to our system of governance that we're gonna continue to commit resources and we're gonna continue to make sure that people who participate in this process are safe.
Okay, one last question for you, and then I'm going to open it up to questions to everyone. So I forget who it was that said that the right to vote is the one right that all other rights are dependent upon. Yeah. A lot of people are worried about us losing that. What can we do as citizens on that issue to ensure that our vote is safe? What role can citizens play in this as opposed to just simply our elected officials?
So I'm somebody who my political philosophy was always that economic and civil liberties are tantamount, are paramount. Paramount. And the government's role is to protect those core liberties. But if you believe that the government is not doing it, then what do you rely on? You rely on your political liberties. And so our political liberties, in some sense, do come before that. In terms of what you can do, I would say I would encourage you to do what I encourage anyone who's thinking about running for office to do is in a notepad, a physical notepad with a pen or a pencil, write down what your lines in the sand are, that under no circumstances will you cross this line. Under no circumstances will you vote for a candidate who has crossed this line. And just write down some very fundamental concepts that you believe every candidate, every elected official should adhere to. And then go back to that. Because there will be a time when you as a candidate will want to cross that. There will be a time when you as a voter will want to say, gosh, but now I seem really bothered by inflation, or I'm really bothered by this other issue that now seems sort of pressing. But I go back to my notebook and I see that I would not vote for anyone who crossed these lines. And hold yourself to that, because I think that can help us vote in the people that at least adhere to our basic principles and can help make our system healthier and stronger.
Okay, so this is going to be a question for the open panel, but I'm going to start with Rusty. Because your counterpart in Alaska said something very interesting to me on one of my podcasts. Catherine Gissel, I think is her name, the majority leader in the Senate in Alaska. She was opposed to the open primary ranked choice voting top four election that had passed her. She thought that it was a terrible idea. She's now become a big supporter. After it passed, she's still the majority leader there. She's involved in making sure that it works, yeah, kind of interesting. But when she came on our show, I asked her the question, well, what made you change? And she said, well, two things. She said, the first one was, she said there was a lot of rumors about how it was going to change parties. She says it really didn't change many people in parties. She says, but it did change how people acted. This is what she said to me. She said, look, in the old system, these were the top three issues that we had to deal with. Number one was who uses what bathrooms? Number two, are you pro-choice? Are you pro-life? She said, number three was the election of fraud. She said, in the new legislature, these are the top three issues: education, transportation, and economic development. She said, those issues they don't want to talk about. Now, it's not hard to figure out why. In every one of those issues I just mentioned, there's a huge advantage in the partisan primary to making those your top issues when only 6% of the public's voting. This system, the change in their system, allowed more people in. I want to know what your thoughts are, if you're willing to give them, on what do you think happens if more independents actually begin to participate? Is that good for the system, bad for the system, unintended consequences? Your thoughts, Rusty.
There's a writer, Ellul, E-L-L-U-L. He wrote a book called Propaganda, and it talks about the effects and how to make it and how to do it and how to recognize it. One of the things that he said late in the book is that people in highly propagandized situations, very divisive, very propagandized, do one of two things. They, in defense, self-defense, bury themselves into one side or the other. So they're surrounded by security, or they flee from the battle. They move from the neighborhood. I'm tempted, you know, I'm tempted to flee for the hills. But what does that bring me, and what does that bring my children? So to the question of, is there a system that cannot be gamed? Can you game a primary course? It's very simple. Okay, everybody, let's all vote. Let's all sign up, register as Democrats in order to get this person more edge because we fear that person. You can game that system. Can you game ranked choice voting? Probably we'll figure out a way to do it. Can you game an open primary? I don't know, but it's very attractive. The open primary to me, because parties is such a big business, it's a big business to hate people and to develop that hate in other people and to divide people. But an open primary that allows, you know, and talking to Chuck and others, you know, you can get a lot of people as a candidate for 500 signatures, and then you winnow those down, or I get to vote any way I want when I go to the primary. Seriously, why does an independent lack civil liberties that a Republican or a Democrat, which are not constitutional structures? A party isn't a constitutional structure. Why do they get a constitutional advantage and an independent would not? So I think the idea of us examining what works, what doesn't work, what could we try, I think it's totally fine. It's totally fine. Does Stephen, that answer a question?
Perfect. Stephen, any comments?
I agree. No.
Okay.
I agree with to the point of you know, I do think that we should always be aware of the unintended consequences of a change to a system. And there will be ways, if you did change the electoral system, then there would probably be some things that people wouldn't have imagined will happen. But I think that all of this departs from an understanding that the method in which we elect people does have an impact on how people campaign and on the people that we elect. I also think it's important to realize that there, unless you watched, what was the old Mel Gibson movie where he brings down, "People of Israel, I bring you these 15. And then he drops one of the tablets and he says, 10 commandments. Which
Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks. History of Time.
I was going to say Mad Max Beyond Thunder.
I should know that. And so it's not like the way that we have it now or the way that any state has it now was written in those accidentally dropped commandments 11 through 15. And so I think we can look at that, but I do think that there's also something more latent that we also need to be talking about, which is just sort of how we interact with each other on a cultural basis and what we're learning in school and why does hate messaging sort of
trump others?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Amanda, I'm going to put a little twist on it for yours. So, when you did your polling all the public, you're 3,500, that is a massive sample, but it's really not focused on the 6 or 7% of the people who vote in the two primaries. Do you see that as being one of the fundamental reasons why there's a disconnect between what's happening legislatively and what it is that the public wants?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think that the Gallup Arizona survey data and then the Arizona voters agenda really illustrates very clearly that we have a disconnect between shared priorities across the majority of Arizonans, regardless of political party, and what we're seeing translated, you know, and the lack of that being translated into our politics and solutions. Which, because when we did the first Gallup Arizona survey in 2009, and then when we released the results in 2020, a number of people said to us, well, this is great, but we have a really big disconnect between the Arizona we want and what's happening in our politics. And how do you explain that? And for a while, you know, we didn't really have a great answer to that. But then when you start to think about incentives, then you really start to think about, well, how is the system designed? You know, what are the results we're getting and why might that be? And really, I think leads us to examine opportunities, including the primaries. So Center for the Future of Arizona as a nonpartisan entity, we're not taking a position on any particular solutions, but certainly our data show, for example, only 33% of Arizonans believe that elected leaders represent the diverse perspectives and voices of Arizonans. We also know, excuse me, if I'll just preview some results from our upcoming 2024 survey, the top three issues that Arizonans are concerned about of likely voters are immigration, water, and education. It really illustrates the point that mm-hmm. you made, you know, in terms of, but yet are those the top issues being discussed? And then when we look at unaffiliated and independent voters, our 2024 survey ABA results are going to show that over half don't feel like they have leaders or candidates who are running for office who are speaking to the issues they care about. And that really then starts to have an impact on who decides to show up to vote, either because they're confused about what they're able to do or don't feel like they have a candidate that's talking about them. And we also have something called the Arizona Progress Meters, which help us understand across issue areas how Arizona is actually doing. We have civic health progress meters. There's census data that shows us who is voting, and for those who are not voting, why aren't they? In the last election in Arizona, almost 25% of Arizonans didn't vote because they didn't think their voice mattered, their vote mattered. And that's a sharp decline. I went back and looked at the data in 2020, 2022, 24% of Arizonans didn't vote because they didn't think it mattered, compared to 18% nationally. In 2020, it was 15% of Arizonans compared to 18% nationally. In 2018, 14% compared to 18% nationally. So that is a concerning trend. And so again, thinking about civic engagement is important. And the last point I'll make is that I think the point that you've made, Stephen, on the culture of civic engagement is equally important, and that our engagement doesn't start and stop at the ballot box. It is part of the ongoing culture that we need to pay attention to. And we're really proud to have partnered with Secretary Fontes and with your office on things like school participatory budgeting, engaging young people early on, K through 12 in communities across the state, to learn about how their voice can matter and the difference that it can make when you vote. And in this case, they get to decide how funds are used to build public projects that enhance their school communities. That's what starts to build that will and that resilience to be able to show up and vote. But we have to have the systems that encourage people to do so.
Thank you. Adrian?
So I think one of the critical components here, particularly as it pertains to engagement and getting folks who are not affiliated politically involved, is the ultimate sort of big goal of American democracy, right? We can talk about methods. We can talk about sort of some of these other sort of second level stuff before we get down to the technical, exactly how do we do that? The biggest goal in my mind of American democracy as we've moved forward, and this is informed by the way that we've made these large changes, is as close to maximum participation as possible. The one real American tradition that we've seen over the last almost 250 years now is the expansion of the franchise beyond merely property owners, getting women the right to vote, ultimately all people of color, and then finally our indigenous brothers and sisters fully enfranchised. This is sort of the expansion that our history tells us is the real American tradition. And so outside of the realm of just the political opinion making, even beyond the question of what the policies are, I think we should look at the ultimate goal perhaps that we all share, and that is as close to maximum participation as possible. And here's why. Because in a democracy, you want the true voice of our society to be dictating what direction we go in. We want the most complete representation of the population to be selecting our leaders. We don't want it to be a narrow few, a narrowly opinionated few to select our leadership. Why? Because we believe that when we all get together, we make better decisions. This is the most fundamental piece of this entire puzzle. And so when it comes to all of the rest of this, we cannot lose the notion that regardless of politics, whether it's a move to the middle, get away from the extremes, or include independence, or this issue or that issue, whether it's water or education. By the way, the Center for the Future of Arizona does an amazing job, I think, kind of laying out this question, particularly given the sample size and how we positively view a much larger sample size. We are all motivated by making the we larger and more representative of all of us. I think that's kind of such a core American value that we all share in common, or that we should share in common, that we sometimes forget to talk about it. So I really wanted to make that particular point. That's because beautiful. It's a big deal that the United States of America has always met its challenges, no matter how significant, no matter how severe, no matter how violent. I mean, we survived a civil war in this nation. We survived many of our states seceding from the Union and taking up arms against fellow Americans. That's a big deal. And we survived it. And we can continue to survive it. God forbid anything like that ever happen again. But the notion is not just a pluribus unum out of many states, one nation, but a pluribus unum. We all do it better together if the together is more of the all of us. I'll just leave it with that bit of poetry, I guess. Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to have Rusty give a final comment, and then we'll do some questions from the audience.
I have a question back to you and to all of us. So if everybody had the franchise, then what is the impetus of money or power? What is the impetus? Does it shift? It does shift. It shifts to how can I get the majority to agree with me? The Romans did it. In their parades, they threw money. The candidates would go and they would throw money. They're called sparciones. We do it too, just a different form. How can I buy enough people to guarantee that I stay? So doesn't it also impute a desire for every person, and in some way, if we could make it happen, but you can't, to be as knowledgeable about your points and about your points and about your points as anybody can be, so that they can make the best choice possible? So not just by bulk, we're all in it, but are we educated about what we're deciding? Mm-hmm. And so I would just hope that that would be part of our future as well.
All right, let's take questions from the audience. Anybody have a question?
I have a question for Mr. Fontes. I understand that there are several lawsuits involving the Elections Procedures Manual that allege that it is that some of the recent changes are unconstitutional or against Arizona law. I was wondering if you'd be willing to comment on that and discuss the current status of these lawsuits.
They will go the way of all other lawsuits that have challenged pretty much every single thing that I've ever done. They're going to lose. They're misguided. And again, I'm not getting into the subject matter of any of those lawsuits. But we had about as complete a participation as we could when we prepared the Elections Procedures Manual. All of the folks who are suing us were involved in the creation and negotiations as we pushed through the Elections Procedures Manual. And of the three current lawsuits, because I hear tell that there might be more, some of them are even challenging some very specific items that have already been litigated and ruled on by the federal district court here in Arizona. They're carbon copies of prior complaints. So I think that there are folks out there who are motivated by grift. I think there's a lot of lawyers out there who have convinced their clients and those clients' funders that they might have some kind of a chance. And I think that it's a shame and it's an embarrassment that the good work that has come out of this office, the good bipartisan work advised by some of these very same people, is getting capitalized on to make a whole bunch of lawyers a bunch of money at taxpayer expense. So I'm a little bit hot about this, but we're going to win in the end.
You wouldn't know.
So undoubtedly there is some meritless litigation that's filed, but I do believe that to the extent that you have a challenge about how elections are administered or about the Elections Procedures Manual, then the courts are the appropriate venue. And I think that, you know, I would always say that's an important part of our election system, is the post-election litigation process. And people should avail themselves of that if they think they have been wrong. Now, again, there is some ridiculous litigation that's filed, but the courts handle that appropriately. What I would also say is, however, we have that. That is the process in this state and in this country. And then you should put stock in what the courts rule. And there have been a lot of people who have been willing to say the courts are only imbued with authority or have a power when they rule in my way, or I only believe them when they rule my way. And so that to me is not only now are you denigrating our election system, but you're denigrating the rule of law in this country. And that is where we decide fact and law in the court system. And so if you want answers, don't look to Twitter, don't look to TikTok, but look to the court decisions that have been rendered over the past 3.5 years regarding election administration.
Let me do 15 more seconds on this. That's one of the reasons why I'm so upset, is because so many of these points and allegations have already been litigated. And it is an insult to the courts as well, which is one of the most critical institutions of our democracy, that these folks are continuing to relitigate something that has already been answered.
Okay, I'm only going to time for two more questions because we're coming upon the hour.
Thank you all for being here. I see a lot of the same people when I come to these events. And the one thing that's a little bit discouraging to me is it is the same people, and it's not 500 of us, it's like maybe 100 of us. I'd like to hear what you have to say about how we can overcome this thought, what Amanda just told us about how apathetic voters after the 2020 election grew in numbers, to think they didn't have a voice, that's just so troubling to me. What do we do? How can we actually grow this crowd? I'd love to hear what you have to say. And just as a side note, I'd love to see that the Republican Party goes the way of the Whigs in the 1850s.
No bias.
You know, I'm going to take a stab at that one, and then I'll let the panel open it up to it, and I'll just make mine short. Give me 20 dedicated people. I guarantee you I can change the world, much less the state. Now, they have to be dedicated. They have to be focused on it. Give me 1,000 people, I can burn it down.
One of the things that we have found in sharing our data and all sorts of presentations, basically, if we're invited to present to anyone in any part of the state, we share the data and the findings we have, is that often people are really surprised in this idea that there is agreement on a number of core issues for the future of the state, because the narrative is really counter to that. You know, we do continue to hear that we're divided. So we actually believe that in sharing the message that we agree more than we disagree, that that can provide a basis for hope. And while hope can sound sort of like soft, if people don't have hope that something actually can be done, or hope that we do actually agree on some fundamental issues, absent that, it's not likely that you're going to engage. And so we've actually had instances where people have been emotional in audiences hearing the data because it's been so counter to what they've experienced. And yet they'll say, you know, I have felt like when I talk to my neighbor, there are some things, you know, that we might agree on. So I think continuing to share the messages is an important component of this, and then inviting people in to start to think critically about why do we have this disconnect, and to really start to examine it, because talking about primary reform is not top of mind, I think, for many everyday Arizonans in terms of how many people really understand exactly how it works, or understand that it's within our ability as Arizonans to change that if we want to. You know, sometimes I think people don't even realize where we can create change. So continuing to share that as possibilities, I think, is important.
Other comments?
Oh,
Steve?
Keep going, Clint. Keep going. One of the groups that we go to, Principals First, you know that 4 years ago, only like 100 people showed up to that conference. This year, it was 1,000. Keep going. Some of these things take a while. I think, it takes a while. And then pivot. You know, sometimes election administrators create a really neat video that then they put on YouTube and it gets 60 views. And so maybe you don't spend that much time on the next thing and you pivot to something else. So we just started doing these Facebook Live things, and then that actually has been yielded more dividends for us. And so, there has to be different voices in the field, because otherwise the flooding the zone with not accurate information, then it owns the entire landscape. And so I would just say, keep going and keep trying new methods.
I'd like to give a plug. I'm holding up a text. It's on the top is Jake Hoffman, and he's talking about Ken Bennett. And Jake Hoffman, Republican, Queen Creek, on rumors he heard about Senator Ken Bennett, Republican Prescott, positioning himself to be Senate president if the chamber becomes evenly divided. So his comment, here it is. I have walked by and seen him yucking it up with Democrats in the minority caucus room.
Wow. Yeah.
And then on the bottom, he's a power-hungry narcissist who thinks so highly of himself that nobody else can have any idea better than anything he's ever thought about doing. So, is that divisive time of unity in the party? So, there is a culture that each of us has to look in the mirror at night and say, am I part of that culture? And then to promote a change to that culture. And I think what you did and what he just mentioned are ways to do that.
Although that that explains a lot about why so few people want to talk to me. I kind of just figured it out. All right, so we're going to do one more question, and then what we're going to ask the panel to do is we'll let each one of them, we'll let each one of the panelists ask. I know we have three or four people here, but maybe what we'll do is ask your question, and then we'll see if the panel can hit both of them.
I've been reading a book called The Primary Solution by Nick Troiano, who's the founding executive director of Unite America. And he makes two points. One is that people don't understand that things can change, especially the primary system. They think it's always been that way. And so he sees that as a barrier. And he also sees the other thing I think that Stephen addressed, which is that people don't understand that the primary is important. They think it's only the big battle at the end in the presidential election. That's the real thing. That's where everybody gets. The media doesn't give primaries as much attention as they do the general election in November. So again, what do you guys think from your offices and your positions, what can you do to change those perceptions?
And then you want to ask your question as well?
So mine is more of a comment, and it's Voter Choice Arizona, one of our war cries is bad systems beat good people every time. If you want to, you've got to fix the system. I would be interested to hear, I realize you can't endorse things, but are we on the right track, do you think?
All right, and so you can answer either one of those questions, but include your final comments with it. And maybe we'll just start the middle because I started at each end each time. Amanda?
Well, I think the points that you raised, I just echoed in terms I agree that there isn't wide understanding of the importance of the primaries and the fact that we can change them. So I think that's an important message. And I think in terms of taking steps towards imagining a different primary system and a different structure, that we need to do that if we want to have different outcomes. You know, otherwise we're going to continue to have similar outcomes in terms of people who are incentivized to speak to a small percentage of their base on either side who really are not representative of the larger views. So I think it's important. And critical.
Stephen?
I'm still thinking about what Clint said. So I would also say, so some of the people are wearing t-shirts for the Make Elections Fair initiative that is trying to get on the ballot. You know, you might look out at this group and say, I wish, you know, it was even, you know, five times this size. But that group's raised, I think, like $6 million.
$7 million?
$8 million? Do I have nine?
Okay. Go to Fontes, he's got the nine.
Adrian's good for million. $9 million. All right. So that's I think they have gotten a whole bunch of stuff. So
by the way, all local people.
Okay.
Not one check from outside the state.
So clearly there's some oomph there. I think a lot of people have signed it, but I would say to the extent that you're interested in asking these questions and without getting into what's the right solution, is it the status quo, is it changing it this way, is it changing it that way, I think that more people than ever are asking this question as reflected in Nick's book. I read a statistic that something like 75-80% of Americans didn't want a rematch between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. We now, I guess officially, have a rematch between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. So a lot of people are saying, well, you know, why, if that's what we want, isn't that what we're getting in the final election? And so to the extent that you've long been thinking about electoral reform, this is your moment. Enjoy it. This is your moment in the sun. And I think it could be, I think it could be interesting. I think it could be good.
All right, Adrian.
I'm going to take a rare opportunity to correct my colleague, the recorder. It's not official yet.
Correct.
I love when he admits that he's wrong.
I'm wrong.
So it's just
This
is
wrong.
The best way to start.
You're
right.
I'm not very good looking. You are exceptionally.
I'll take that too. Thanks.
Just as a matter of quick information, for the presidential preference election, as of the latest statistics, and I just got them texted to me a moment ago, turnout among Democrats in that presidential preference election is 34.8%. Turnout among Republicans, 43.2%, for a combined partisan turnout of 39.4%. When you combine it with the total number of voters who would have been eligible had everybody been able to vote, it would be 25.4%. Do with those numbers what you will. As far as whether or not we're on the right track, and I think it goes directly in with your question, and thank you, you guys. I don't know if you rehearsed that. You're wearing the same shirt, so probably. there is no question whatsoever that you're on the right track, because we cannot do anything in this country unless we have a conversation about it, unless we're talking about it, unless we're putting energy and time and resources into it. And to me, the right track isn't whether or not this particular issue becomes a ballot issue and then passes. To me, the question that we're on the right track is answered in the affirmative, because we're having the conversation in the first place. Because what began in around 2016 and really amped up in 2020 wasn't so much the downfall and the demise of American democracy, but this, I think if we look at it with a positive view, this slow rolling civics lesson that I've spoken to so many times. We now have people who are organized in an effort that did not exist then to try to include all of American voices in this primary system. The sentiment may have existed under the surface, but now we have an organized effort to try to educate voters, to try to make a systemic reform in some way. And it's the conversation that matters. I can say right now, in 2016, 1 year and 1 day ago, we had that presidential preference election here in Maricopa County that changed the course of my life. Not because I decided that I wanted to get into a political office, because there was no way in the world at that moment that you could have convinced me that I was going to beat Helen Purcell. But I knew we had to have the conversation. I knew we had to have that discussion. And I believe enough in the American ethos and American democracy that she needed to have an opponent. We had to have the discourse, because even in losing that election, I would have been impactful in creating a space for the conversation to exist. And so kudos to all of you who are making the effort to have that conversation, even if for the moment you happen to be the same people in the same room, right? This is what democracy is about. What you are doing is American democracy. So give yourselves credit and continue forth. This is where we're at right now. This slow rolling civics lesson is slowly but surely starting to bear fruit. We are a nation of a third of a billion people. We are the single longest in existence form of government that exists on the planet today. And we are constantly improving in fits and starts, and we're getting better for our people. And that to me is the long view. I think it's the right view. I think it's the hopeful view. I mean, look, what if Luke Skywalker had stayed on Tatooine? Right? And had waited for the next season, like Uncle Ben had suggested. You know? We would not have had that new hope.
Okay. Rusty.
Okay. What? What? We're talking about a disconnect here. What? I was thinking about the President of the United States at Gettysburg delivering the Gettysburg Address, and how the point of his address right in the last few minutes is to see it. A, would this nation long endure? But also, would we take a new emphasis, a new drive, a new desire to make sure that it did? And so what you've said,
and you've said, and you've said, and you've said, it's not just the group. It's the individual drive that is like the most benevolent virus we could ever share. That if we can share that drive and initiate it in other people, that yes, you get hit in the head, and yes, you get back up. And to keep getting back up is what we all must do, can do, and will do. And so I just want to make sure that this form of government never perishes from the earth.
You're and here.
Thank you all very much.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break, but before we get to that, I just want to say a couple of things. And this is specifically an answer to your question. Adrian told us that about 25% of the public voted in this last election. And I just want you to think about that for a moment. Here's what that means. Say 13% of the Republicans voted in 13% of the total public voted in a Republican primary, about 12% of the public voted in the Democratic primary. Just do a little bit of math on that. But here's where it's tricky. What the governor told us, in 70% of the seats in America, out of the 5,000 elected seats, there is no general election that matters. And that means that those people who were elected by that 12% never have to talk to anybody on the other side. I can promise you this, I've seen polling. Those groups are not driven by aspirational goals. This group is it that were involved, as Rusty just so eloquently put, in an aspirational goal. They're more driven by grievances. They're upset, they're angry. They want to flip a bird to the people on the other side. We have to change that. We have to get this back to where a majority of this country has control over our election process. Now, the role that we play, they can't play the role of the elected officials of saying, hey, you need to go out and change, because it didn't look fair in the election process. But God help us, we need people who protect those elections. And these two have done it, right? She's talking about how these issues don't connect to the public. Most importantly, somebody sacrificed himself on that altar of freedom that he was talking about a moment ago, Rusty. God bless Rusty Bauer. Thank you for all that you've done. Give this group, do what I'm doing, stand up and give this group a big hand for all that they've done.
And we stand today on the edge of a new frontier, the frontier of unknown opportunities and perils. It holds out the promise of more sacrifice instead of more security. The new frontier is here.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.